This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, I'm glad you could be with us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. We're continuing our NFL previews leading up to the kickoff of this season next week. It is the NFC South this week, and the Saints are the final team that we're doing. And I'm very excited about it because, again, we talked about the Saints as a team, talked about Drew Brees, Sean Payton, weapons around, all of the things that we normally do. But there is that side component for the New Orleans Saints. The window, Drew Brees' age of getting back to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl, should have been there last year. Weren't because of a bad non-call, if you will. How does that weigh on the psyche of a team? How does that weigh on the psyche of a fan base? How does it feel in New Orleans today when you feel like you've been robbed by a league? It's not being taken as a failure, just a simple human error. There seems to be a larger thing that people in New Orleans are feeling about the league and Roger Goodell. And maybe that is unjustified in terms of conspiracy and all of that. And I very much doubt the conspiracy angle. But there are times as a fan base when you feel so cheated that you just go down any other wormhole that you can when it comes to how you were cheated. And that is the question with the Saints. Brees is turning 40. The window, of course, always gets short when you're talking about a quarterback that reaches that threshold. But this is one of the few teams that will break down in these previews where it is absolutely Super Bowl or nothing, that everything else is a failure. And they have not been to the Super Bowl in a decade. Remember, this was 10 years ago, the city, which I thought was one of the most inspiring Super Bowl wins I had ever seen in terms of the way that city was practically on watch for losing their NFL franchise after Hurricane Katrina. How they were going to go to San Antonio. They needed to go somewhere else. That city was never going to bounce back. Look at it. It's underwater. And it bounced back in such a way that in a very short amount of time, a couple of years, they were Super Bowl champions. And they were having a parade in a city that was once underwater and filled with trash and a few dead bodies. And that is an incredible turnaround for not only that city, but the organization. But it's been a decade. And that window is getting short. We'll talk more about the Saints next.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's Throwback Thursday. It's 1997 on the birth of Netflix today. And I would change the face of entertainment. This is, Now, I had this. What is this song? I knew this and I lost it. Go ahead, give it to me.
Savage Garden,
that's right.
I want you.
God, I had it on the tip of my tongue. God, man, you're making me go into the Rolodex.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Of tunes for 1997. Yeah, I remember this song. Gosh. So, the New Orleans Saints are on the clock today. You got to think, and you and I were talking about this earlier, that window is really short.
It's closing.
It's really closing.
And that's
it's Super Bowl or bust.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, last year probably should have been their year.
Yep. It really should have been. I mean, we all...
And that's why, you know, it's very interesting to see with this team this year, what's the psyche of this team? When knowing that last year was our chance, that was our year to get to the Super Bowl, who knows if they were going to win? They might have been able to fare better against the Patriots than the Rams did. But again, because I put more stock in Drew Brees than I do, what's the guy's name out of California?
Jared Goff.
And sometimes these names just escape me. We're just dealing with new quarterbacks all the time. But with Jared Goff's been in the league 3 years now.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think Drew Brees could have figured out a way. Just having more football intelligence than Jared Goff, more experience than Jared Goff.
I thought the Super Bowl of the matchups that were potential, right? We had Kansas City, New England, and the Rams and the Saints, that the NFL certainly would have loved another Chiefs-Rams Super Bowl, right? Certainly the NFL would have dug that. Yeah, the high-scoring affair that we saw during the regular season translated onto the field at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Me personally, and I don't know if it's an age thing or not, I was really looking forward to a potential Drew Brees-Tom Brady matchup. I liked that
idea.
Yeah,
that would have
like
been...
two aging quarterbacks that still got it, like,
and
got
maybe,
it in a
maybe
big way.
Maybe we can this year because, I mean, I don't
still,
see...
Still potential, of course,
I don't
right.
see Drew Brees slowing down at all.
Yeah, I don't either. This is a question I'm going to have for Karen. Is it Loftus who's going to be joining us? Loftus is her?
Yep.
All right. She's from ABC 26 WGNO in New Orleans. She's going to join us in about 25 minutes. One of the questions I'm going to have for her is, and I've asked this to Mike Petralia a number of times with the Patriots, it's the same question. When you're close to a team, when you're looking at the finer details than a guy like me, where you're there every day and you're watching practice on a week in and week out basis, do you notice Father Time creep in a different way than we do? Because we see Brees on Sunday, right? And we see him still being able to throw it, Michael Thomas wide open, finding these guys throwing for 400 yards a game, et cetera, all of those things. But do they notice that, yeah, this is a guy that's hitting 40, and he does look during the week a little different every single year.
God, who was it that we talked to where they were saying that, you know, they've noticed he takes a little bit longer to warm up?
Oh, was that? Who were we talking about then? Because was it Petralia in Boston?
Maybe
on Brady. But you notice those things when you are on a team on a day by day basis. Ask anybody in Denver with Peyton Manning. If you were only watching Peyton Manning in the final 2 years in Denver and just seeing a guy that was still throwing the ball pretty good until that last season. But people in Denver were like, yeah, I'm noticing a little different. He's a little slower in his step, a little bit different. It's the same thing here with quarterbacks that are older. You are going to notice a little bit of a hitch, a little bit of, yeah, you know what? This is taking a little bit more time during the week. On Wednesdays, it's a little different. But we only see Sundays, and Sundays have been great, and Sundays have been fine. But you have to know that the door is closing soon. And like I said earlier, remember, this is a franchise, and again, I know it feels like ancient history, but do you guys remember how close the New Orleans Saints were to becoming the San Antonio Saints? Remember
yes.
that year after the hurricane where they were practicing in parking lots? Remember they didn't have a home, right? They were playing in San Antonio, and I think they were splitting time with somewhere else. I don't know if they were playing in Baton Rouge or wherever, but obviously the dome needed to be rebuilt, and they were working on that. But
they couldn't rebuild the dome just yet because
right.
it was being a shelter.
They were still building. This is afterwards as the season was progressing and the waters receded. But the dome was ruined. They needed to fix that. And there was a belief, and I was one of them. I was on the I don't know how they're going to do this, because what you were looking at was a city that wasn't just decimated by a hurricane, but there was this idea that Where is the city going to be in the future? Will business come back? Will people come back? What will be the population of New Orleans when it's all said and done? Will people return? What do they have to return to? What do local businesses have to return to? Will they relocate to other areas in the country? What will the infrastructure be in the city of New Orleans to support an NFL football team? Look, we know the NFL is a national business, right? The Saints, as an organization, get the TV money, the national TV money that's split 32 ways. They get the revenue from the merchandise of all the teams except the Dallas Cowboys. But you also do count on local businesses. You count on local sponsorships. You count on all of that with radio, with signage in the stadium, and all of the things, programs, all of those things. You count on some level of local participation in what you're doing. I didn't know where the Saints stood, where New Orleans stood 15 years ago, whatever it was, 14 years ago. And then they were able to say, nope, there's something about this city. And I'm telling you, there's something about that team and that city that is ingrained in and of itself. We see it a lot with the Bears. You see it in Green Bay. You see it in all these other places. But there are other pockets where the Patriots weren't always popular. right? The Patriots weren't always the top team in New England, right? That's still a Red Sox town. They might not even be still. It's still considered by many to be a baseball town, right? The Rams were the greatest show on turf, but the Cardinals, St. Louis is a baseball town. The fabric of New Orleans is the New Orleans Saints. The fabric of that city is the New Orleans Saints. And I can remember people that I knew that grew up in that area, that lived in Colorado at the time I did, that would tell me, you have no idea what you're saying and how important what you're saying, how devastating would be if the Saints moved to San Antonio. You don't have any idea. This is not just a city that had it and lost it. Houston had a football team. They lost theirs. Cleveland had a football team. They lost theirs. St. Louis had two football teams and lost both of them. But I remember the pain some of my friends from New Orleans would tell me. If that ever happened, that city's dead. That you do not understand the fabric of that city to that team. When they won the Super Bowl, it's probably the biggest Super Bowl victory I can remember for an organization ever in terms of what it meant to the city. I mean, I grew up with this where Saint fans wore bags on their head. They were terrible. I mean, terrible organization. And
the good old days.
The good old days. And for Drew Brees and that organization to bounce back and get back to New Orleans, win the Super Bowl. We all remember the Steve Gleason blocked punt, how electrifying that was in that city. It's different. It's not unique. All right, let me make this clear. It's not unique. There's a lot of cities where the fabric of the city is interwoven with the NFL franchise. It's bigger than just a local sport. It's bigger than just a local NFL team. That it is interwoven. Green Bay is a perfect example. Probably the best example of it. But in New Orleans, it's very much like that. And that window is closing. I mean, it's amazing to me that Brees hasn't gotten back to the game. Right? I mean, forget winning it. I mean, just hadn't gotten back to the game. And I think that's why last year hurts even more than just a bad call that didn't go our way, that a lot of us have felt in sports. A lot of us have gone through that. We can all pick a time where we got robbed, whether it's a college, NFL, Major League Baseball, basketball, whatever. We can all pick a moment in our life where we felt a call didn't go our way and it cost us a championship or it cost us an opportunity to do something special. Maybe make the playoffs. Maybe make a bowl game or something along those lines, right? Maybe it's to win a game against a rival, okay? Maybe it's that. But we all have those moments where we feel we were cheated. Why is this resonating so deeper in New Orleans than I can remember? I don't remember teams putting out lawsuits on the organization that is the governing body of the sport. Right? I mean, did people in St. Louis sue Major League Baseball when the Dom Dinkinger called Jorge Horta, I think, safe at first base in the 85 World Series?
Really
hope I got all those stats right. They should have. But, I mean, but this was a guy is carrying this through. He carried it through to a point where he's getting Roger Goodell in the stand, for crying out loud. It's just, I think it's because the window is closing. We don't know. I mean, who is Taysom Hill going to be the starting quarterback if Brees is when Brees is done? Is that, I mean, he is best described as the Swiss Army knife of the New Orleans Saints. He can do 1,000 things, right? He can play quarterback. He can be a receiver. He can run. He's special teams guy. He's amazing. But with Brees, you have a Super Bowl team. You have a Super Bowl team in the Saints. That's it. Nothing else. There is no dream to win the division. There's no dream to make it out of the first round. This is Super Bowl or nothing. This is a team that's Super Bowl or nothing. That's it. We don't even have to ask the question of Karen Loftus of ABC 26. Like I had to with some other teams where we weren't really quite sure what the mindset was of the fans. I can guarantee you in New Orleans, it's Super Bowl or nothing. That's it. Anything else is failure. And they've got a really good team to boot. So we'll talk about that coming up. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's, please, if you can spell it that way, as we roll along on a Throwback Thursday, SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Prepare for road trips. Before your travel begins, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you go will ensure a safe journey. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Karen Loftus joins us, WGNO ABC 26. That's coming up in 13 minutes. Get a view on the Saints in our preview. Oh, I've been waiting for this show to address this, Mr. Culver.
I didn't do
so,
it.
I know you didn't do it.
Okay.
So, our boys on the main event,
I got a
piece of audio in my email yesterday from their producer, Jose. Did you get that?
Yeah, I got something too. Yeah. I didn't really know what this was. I was afraid to open it, think it was going to be like Anthrax or something.
Me too. I got a little nervous because it said the title of it was something about the war has begun.
Shots fired.
Shots fired. That's right.
Shots fired.
So I went, okay, whoa. Oh, and then I saw that it was a cut from the main event. And by the way, Cody Stutes and Jake Asman do a really good job in afternoons. They're really fun guys. Well, I had a little bit of an issue with this shots fired because they talked about a story in which there was a stalker of Taylor Swift who got arrested outside of her home in Rhode Island. He was hanging out her home. I guess he made himself too comfortable, and he got arrested. Okay, so Cody then says on the air, "Well, I wonder if Tony D is going to show up to work tomorrow."
Yep.
To insinuate that I am a Taylor Swift stalker.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing. One thing they say about comedy is, you know, that, you know, it's funny because there's a basis of truth behind it, right?
Right.
The problem is, I have never once said or have shown any affinity towards Taylor Swift. I don't even know what she's doing these days. I don't listen to her songs. My kids had to tell me the other day she had a new album out.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
The only thing I've seen about her, I didn't know she had a new album either, was that she apparently has, I'm already forgetting the guy who called her. Kid Rock.
Kid Rock, right.
Because I saw the other day that Kid Rock was trending, and whenever you see a celebrity's name trending, you're like, uh-oh.
What did they do?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Usually when a celebrity's trending, it means, oh, that guy died.
Yeah, right.
So I saw Kid Rock. I'm like, well, you know, he had a good run. So that's what I was thinking, going to see like some sort of eulogy or, you know, something like that. And I looked into it and saw that Kid Rock had called Taylor Swift out because Taylor Swift is joining the Democratic Party or announcing that she's joining.
She's getting political.
So it was all political. Kid Rock obviously is more political nowadays, and people were just skewering him online for, you know, pretending to be something that he's not. That's all I really knew about Taylor Swift recently, was being the subject of a Kid Rock rant.
Yeah. So I kept thinking to myself while I was listening to this, when have I ever said I'm fascinated by Taylor Swift? I'm in love with Taylor Swift. I am way too old to concern myself with Taylor Swift.
Well, let's not go there.
I have no idea what she's doing.
I will say this. You're not way too old. She is turning 30.
That is okay. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
If you had told me she was 26, I would have been like, okay.
Well, what I was really hoping for, the only reason why I looked it up today, because our Throwback Thursday is, you know, Netflix being created on this day in 1997. I was really hoping that Taylor Swift was born in 97, because I thought she would have been.
Yeah, sure.
It would make sense to me.
So I don't know where that's coming from. So I responded to him by saying, look, you're talking to a guy that had a childhood crush on Stevie Nicks, who's 71 years old.
Yes.
Stevie Nicks is 71 years old.
17.
And I
She's
had
17 years
17.
Old forever.
That's right. Oh, forever. Forever. And I had, I'm really dating myself here, so I'm running the gamble here. I had a childhood crush on Stevie Nicks because of the picture of her on my parents' 8-track cassette tape of the band Fleetwood Mac.
She's not really 71, right?
She is 71. I had to look it up.
That is not right.
If I saw Stevie Nicks, even at 71 years old, I swear to God, I would gush like a schoolboy.
Oh,
love Stevie Nicks. I love Stevie Nicks. I love her music. I love what she represents. I love her style. I love Stevie Nicks.
All right, I'm going on a sidebar because you were talking about childhood crushes, because my first was Christie Brinkley.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't argue
true.
With that. She's my crush today, too. And I still see photos of her. I'm like, how in the world is that happening? But the only reason I brought Christie Brinkley up was because you ever watch the TV show Goldbergs?
No, but I know of it.
You might want to get into it this season because I guess this season's all about a family trip to Disneyland. And
nice.
And they're literally, like, I don't know if it's just the premiere episode or if it's I think it's just the premiere episode for the fall. They are modeling it after Vacation.
Oh, that's great. Good for them.
And Christie Brinkley will be, I don't know if she's reprising a role, but she will be in some way in the show.
Let me tell you something. This is a bold statement I'm about to make, okay? If you were to watch that movie and then you freeze the picture when she's in the red car looking at Chevy Chase, you will not find a prettier human being has ever been created by God's hands.
Yeah. That's the God's honest truth.
It is. There's a shot where her hair's flowing in the wind and she's got that smile and she's smiling at Chevy Chase in that car. It is. She's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
I'm a little more partial. It's later on in that film when right? they decide to go skinny dipping.
They go swimming.
And when she's sitting there in the pool and she comes out and her hair is just slicked back. Yeah, that's a good look for her.
Are you going to go for it? He's bumbling. And
this is crazy. This is crazy.
Good. That's such a good movie.
The best line of the movie comes after that one. Like, it's a great story, Dad. I think Mom will buy it.
Yeah. That Vacation movie is great. That is really fun. They get to the park and it's closed.
Oh my God. John Candy was fantastic.
John Candy was great. He says that's a BB gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a BB gun.
So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there about, yeah. I just don't know where the Taylor Swift love is coming from. It's, you know.
I guess they're just pointing out that you're a creepy man.
Maybe
I don't know where you've ever given that vibe off either.
Yeah, no, I know.
I think they're just, it was low hanging fruit. It's really what it was.
That's what I was thinking. That would be my advice to them was low hanging fruit. That was too easy.
It's like, let me just grab a Tony D.
Yeah, that's a too easy of a joke to make where you just grab a name and you say, I wonder if they're going to show up to work tomorrow. You don't have to do that. You could, but again, let's say there was a stalker for Connie Britton, the actress I have an affinity for, who lives actually in Nashville. I love Connie Britton. She was the wife on Friday Night Lights. Then you could make that joke. And I would totally agree with it. Yeah, I would actually be right behind you.
Behind which one, the stalker or Cody Stutes?
No, I would. If Cody said Connie Britton had a stalker arrested outside Franklin, Tennessee, you could make that joke about me. I would totally be. You could. You wouldn't know. You would still be in the. I saw Connie Britton in Franklin one time, and I just was like, oh, ew. I love Connie Britton. I think she's on that TV show Nashville, but we best know her from Friday Night Lights, the TV show.
Someone I saw that.
She was in the movie too. She was the wife in the movie and the TV show.
You know, like whenever you see a celebrity, like a female celebrity or a celebrity crush that you might have had, and you're like, you know, it's like, oh my God, this girl's really gorgeous. I remember seeing Sarah Michelle Gellar once.
Was she looking Disneyland? Ordinary?
She was looking completely ordinary.
Oh, and you're like, oh.
And I had to do a double take. I mean, first of all, she's like 5'2".
Oh, she's that small?
She's somewhere around that height. She was tiny. Okay. She was small.
I never would have guessed that.
And she was just pushing a stroller. She had taken her kids to Disneyland. And I had to do a double take. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Sarah Michelle Gellar. And she looks nothing like Buffy right now. That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
I really wanted her she should carry a stake with her at all time.
That's right. Of course.
That's what I'm saying.
Of course. I one time was working at a restaurant years ago, and Hulk Hogan came in to the restaurant. It was in Largo, Florida, where he lived. He didn't live in Largo, but he lived near that area. Mm-hmm. And he used to come into this restaurant all the time. And it was the first time. People always said that. And then he came in. But he was wearing an NWO shirt. He looked like he just got off the set. And I remember asking people, I was like, does he dress like this all the time? Like, yeah, all the time. I'm like, wow, that's weird, because you wouldn't expect, like, if Mike Allstott showed up of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right. You wouldn't expect him to be in full uniform.
Just come in with pads on.
Like pads and wearing a number 40 jersey, right?
Or
like,
anyone just, I mean, not even that. You know, maybe, how crazy would it be if an NFL guy came up with his Friday night football look?
Oh, sure, right?
Like
yeah.
In high school, you always wore the jersey with jeans or whatever. If they came in looking like that, you'd be like, what are you doing? Right. So bizarre looking.
So yeah, Hogan, he wore what he wears. Was wearing on the TV show. I think he was with the WCW back then, but it was quite funny. Nevertheless. All right, Karen Loftus will join us, ABC 26 in New Orleans on the Saints and their window for the Super Bowl.
I know what you're doing. I see it all too clear. I only taste the saline when I kiss away your tears. You really had me going, wishing on a star. The black holes that surround you are heavier by far.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
1997, the birth of Netflix. We're celebrating that today on Throwback Thursday, so this is the music of 1997. We go to our Progressive Insurance Hotline. Karen Loftus joins us, WGNO in New Orleans, ABC 26. And it's sponsored by Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get Progressive. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, Karen?
Hey, good morning, Tony. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Great. This year going in terms of the disappointing way last year finished with the non-call pass interference, there is a feeling that there are teams in this league that are Super Bowl or nothing. How much pressure has been around camp? How much have they been able to throw off last year's disappointment?
I think they've done a really good job of moving on from it mentally, I think. Obviously, it's going to be in the back of all of their minds of how their season ended, not only last year, but the year before. But these players are focused, and when you're led by a player like Drew Brees, who is all business and has such a professional approach, these guys are just on a mission to get there and get back to the playoffs, obviously, and then to the Super Bowl and take care of unfinished business.
We talk about this with Tom Brady and some aging quarterbacks, that they look great on Sunday, but during the week, we're not 100% sure how Father Time is kicking in. Have you noticed over the years of Drew Brees, is he showing a little bit of his age? It is a concern, but boy, on Sundays, we don't see it at all.
No, you don't, and you will not, because he and the team are doing what they have to do to make sure that they preserve him as best they can. You know, he'll have a veteran rest day. More this year than last year, I think. I mean, I wasn't keeping track exactly, but it seemed like he had more rest days. And then also in practice, you'll notice that he's the last one to get up from stretching lines, which, I mean, by like 15, 20, 30 seconds. But
wow.
Still, he knows how to take care of his body. He's going to go into extra treatment. He eats well. He does the things he's supposed to. And he knows what he has to do each year as he's going forward in his career towards the end of it, that he has to do to preserve his body. And the team is aware of that. I think there's a constant dialogue of, okay, taking care of reps and counting reps and seeing how much work he's getting out on the field and making sure he's getting the rest that he needs. So, practice is about exhibiting what you can do on the field. And if he's performing at such a high level in the games, then it's not as necessary for him to be practicing a ton. And if you're going to give him a vet day here and there, you know, I think it's going to be more beneficial than detrimental to the team.
Karen, we know about Michael Thomas and we know how important he is to the offense. Who's the two guy? Who's some other wide receivers that he goes to when Thomas is covered?
So the wide receiver room is actually one of the positions that's going to be tough for them to make cuts for Saturday, because they have so many wide receivers in that room. You have Tre'Quan Smith, who's a young guy, he's in his second year. He's dependable. But Ted Ginn Jr., he's one of those vets where he's just reliable, and he's still got that speed. Man, I'm telling you, like, you see him out on the field, and you see him blow by you, and you're like, who is, and you're like, oh, of course, it was Ted.
Right.
And so not only does he have that speed of somebody in their 20s, but he's also dependable. Like, when you throw the ball to him, you know, if you throw a deep ball to him, he's catching it. And he's most likely going to be beating his defender down the field. So those are the two guys who are behind Michael Thomas. And there's a few other guys that are, you know, Keith Kirkwood is probably another name that's going to make the cut, Emmanuel Butler. But there's a handful of guys who are talented who might not make the roster just because they are so deep in that position.
One thing that has been consistent in reading up on the Saints in looking at this preview, I kept seeing the same adjective that was describing Taysom Hill, that he's the Swiss Army knife. So I don't know if it's been marketed that way or what, but it seems like every writer was using that term. How best is he utilized in the offense? I mean, in so many different ways, but in a perfect system, how best does he contribute offensively?
Anywhere they want him. That is the term that came about last year, was the Swiss Army knife. And it really is true. I mean, he's so good at multiple positions that I don't think you can pick one as him being absolutely best. I think he's going to be best whatever the situation is in the game and whatever Peyton needs him for. He's going to go in and do it to the best of his ability. And the guys love it. I mean, not only do the fans love it, but his teammates love it. Like, they have the quarterback challenge that they do after practices. And Taysom won the home run derby. They were hitting tennis balls in the indoor with bats. And Teddy came out and did his press conference. Everybody asked, you know, who won? He's like, Taysom, of course. He's the best athlete on the team. And, you know, it's like the guys like that. The guys like that he comes and he works and he's versatile and he can do it all.
And there is a sense in the NFL, even in a lot of teams, is when you have a player like this, they instantly become fan favorites, and they instantly become, like, everybody likes Breeze and everybody likes Michael Thomas, but there is something about Taysom Hill that becomes, that you have this extra fan base that kind of kicks in when you have a player like that.
It is, because I feel like in the NFL, I mean, you're thinking about players who are at the top level of their position. They do one thing really well. And for him to be at the top level and be able to do multiple positions really well, I think players love to see that, just to see his skill set. Like, he's not just a quarterback. He can run the ball. He can block. He can be on special teams. Like, whatever you need him to do, it's also the idea of just seeing him in different situations. Like, he's always out on the field, and he's always making plays.
Karen Loftus joins us, WGNO ABC 26 in New Orleans, on a Progressive Insurance Hotline as we preview the Saints in our NFC South week. Defensively, I saw that Sheldon Rankins has been back from the torn Achilles, at least working out. Has there been a timetable established yet on when he might be able to start really working his way back in the lineup?
Right. So that was the big news this week. He came back to practice on Monday. He was taken off the PUP list. And the big thing that Sheldon and Peyton said is that there really is not a timetable. I mean, you look at how fast he came back already. I mean, we're talking 7 months in an injury that usually takes a year and maybe more when you're talking about a 300-pound dude. So the fact that he came back in 7 months, I feel like they're just sort of hesitant to say any timetable because he's already shattered what their expectations were already. So Peyton did say that it would be unrealistic for him to be back for week one, which is 11 days away. I mean, that's sort of a no-brainer. But they got to bring him back to practice, get him reps, and slowly bring him back into the fold. But I think everybody's thinking it'll be a couple weeks into the season, but they have not articulated a timetable. They've been very clear about, we're going to just follow protocol and see how he's progressing. And Sheldon even said that when he came to practice on Monday, he thought he was going to training. So it was a surprise to him. It was a surprise to his teammates. It was a surprise to everybody. So it could be one of those things where, you know, he's coming back to game action sooner than we think, and we might not know ahead of time.
There has always been, for a while, the Saints were this team that was explosive on offense, but man, they gave up a lot, would give up a lot of yards and a lot of points. This defense has started to transition into a solid unit. How best would you describe this transition and how they look going into this season?
I think their defense is going to start with their defensive line, and they have some questions there, and they're going to need some depth at their defensive line, but they have a couple key pieces of that defense with Cam Jordan, with Marshawn Lattimore, and, you know, obviously Sheldon Rankins when he comes back, and DeMario Davis, he's another guy that's a huge leader on that defense. And if they can get pressure on the quarterback, this is what I was saying about them in preseason earlier, is that if they can get pressure on the quarterback, get a couple defensive ends who can really attack the quarterback and make him make some bad decisions, I'm confident in their secondary that they can handle the rest. And what we saw from this team last year was how much that sparked the entire team. Like, if they were able to get a sack, if the defense was able to force a turnover, that completely changed the vibe of the game. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the defense to make sure that they are making plays and really being the life behind this team.
I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I did want to get back to last year's non-call in the NFC Championship game. From a player standpoint, team standpoint, I think you're right. I think they've done a good job of moving on. Fan bases, though, are different. What has it been like in the city for, you know, the last, I don't know, 8 months or so since that moment, where fans, it just seems different to me, Karen. It just feels like this isn't just a fan base that got screwed over by a bad moment of officiating. It feels a lot more. There's this lawsuit. They don't seem to get over it. They're making memes and T-shirts and whatnot that the NFL is against them. Is that really going on? Is that just an outside perception of what's happening in the city?
No, that is so real. Like, these guys, these fans are salty here. Like, and it's everywhere too. Like, there's such a bad taste in the fans' mouths that it's unbelievable to me. Because I'm not from here, so I'm coming into this and I'm seeing all this go down. And, you know, afterwards and the boycott bowl and all that, I'm like, man, they're really feeling some type of way about this. And then it's like you're going through the summer and you hear things and you go to the grocery store and the person who's checking you out says something about it. And, like, people will not let it go. They will not let it go. So I'm eager for the season to get here so we can talk about the current season.
Did Sean Payton change up his message? I was in Denver for a long time, and after a while, Mike Shanahan was getting stale. And a lot of it was the record, but they didn't have the success that the Saints have. But we always said, boy, Shanahan still says the same things over and over again. Does Sean Payton mix it up? Does he have a different way of doing things? Does he change his style of coaching?
Oh, his style of coaching, not like his response.
Oh, maybe, and maybe even demeanor. Maybe even demeanor as the years have gone on.
This is my third season covering the team, so I can't speak to, you know, anything before that. So I haven't seen any change since I've been here in my few years. But covering him from a media perspective, he definitely says the same
thing. Yeah, I gotcha.
And has the same mannerisms. But as far as his coaching style, I can't really speak to how it's evolved past, you know, the past couple years. And since I've gotten here, they've been really good, so I can't speak to their, like, 7-9 seasons and his demeanor, like, through that.
Well, then you're a good person to ask about this from just somebody coming in for three, you know, and seeing this team for 3 years. We see these teams in the NFL that are so interwoven into the community, and we were talking about this, that some cities are baseball cities and the football team may be good, but there is just this feeling like it's just a baseball town, or the NFL team isn't as big in places like Jacksonville and other places. But with the Saints, they're that one of those teams where I feel like the identity of the city is so entrenched in with the football team. From a person that sees that on a daily basis, what is that like?
It's crazy. I mean, when I first got here, that was one of the first things that I was told. It was Saints are king and LSU football is, you know, after that. And then it's literally everything else. And it's crazy because it's like, you know, things are going to be different, I think, this year with the Pelicans having, you know, such hype around them and Zion. But before that, I mean, you would forget that there was another professional team here.
Yeah.
And it's Saints everything. And it's crazy to see how embedded it is in the city. And it's just completely the identity of this city is Saints football.
Unbelievable. Good stuff. Great, Karen. I really appreciate your time. Hope we get you on during the season when they start doing some good things as we expect.
Yeah, for sure, Tony. Sounds good.
You got it. Karen Loftus, again, WGNO, ABC 26 in New Orleans on the Saints, 13-3 last year. Disappointing finish in the NFC Championship game. But with all things being equal, and we always preface this, all things being equal with injuries and all that other stuff, this is a team that should be right back where they left off from last season. I know the competition might get a little stiffer, but there's no reason to think the Saints aren't going to win the NFC South. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
Fantastic, it's fantastic.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, 1997 Throwback Thursday in this hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Who did this song? This is you were right, this is the most earwormy song of the year.
Aqua.
Aqua? That was the name of the band?
Aqua.
This is their only hit, right?
Oh, it has to be.
Goodness gracious.
The only thing I was thinking just now, like a few seconds ago, is I bet you Quicken Loans is loving the fact you're doing this read over the top of this song.
I know, right? Yeah. Poppy.
Oh, this is fantastic. We'll send this to them. They'll be like, oh, yeah. Wait, we found this in the archives. Nope. Yeah. It was read last week.
That's right. On Twitter, the Saints were such an embarrassment that they were the team to lose and break Tampa Bay's 26-game losing skid in 1977. Yeah, they were embarrassment. It was so bad, the Saints fired head coach Hank Stram after the loss. That's right. Listen, that's all I remember as a kid is the Saints being terrible. Absolutely abysmal.
Perennial doormat of the league.
Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. Now,
that's back, that was the NFC West, right?
Yeah.
When they were in the NFC West.
NFC West. That's right.
Yeah.
So was the Atlanta Falcons. You know, when I was a kid, I thought Atlanta was in California because they played in the West in both the NFL and Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I remember getting an argument with my second grade teacher over that. They can't be in Georgia.